Kaelin continued, "You say this is a battle for the very existence of magic in this world, yet your work to fulfill prophecy may have already doomed magic. Without your intervention, the chimes would never have come to be loosed upon the world. Yes, Richard managed to banish them, but what irreversible harm was done? We may have our power back, but during the time the chimes withdrew magic from this world, creatures of magic, things dependent on magic for their very existence, surely died out. Magic requires balance to exist. The balance of magic in this world was disturbed. The irrevocable destruction of magic may have already begun, all because of your slavish service to prophecy. If not for you, Prelate, Jagang, the Imperial Order's army, and all your sisters would be back there, behind the barrier, and we would be here, safe and at peace. You cast blame everywhere but where it belongs. If freedom, if magic, if the world itself is destroyed, it will all be by your hand, Prelate." The low moan of the wind was the only sound, and made the sudden silence all that much more agonizing. Anne stared with tear-filled eyes up at Kaelin. Snow sparkled in the rays of a cold dawn.
"It isn't like that, Kaelin. It only seems that way to you in your pain."
"It is that way," Kaelin said with finality. Anne's mouth worked, but this time no words came out. Kaelin thrust out her hand, palm up. "The journey book. If you think I would not destroy this woman's life, then you don't know the first thing about me. She's one of your sisters, helping to destroy the world in the name of good, or else she is still one of the Keeper's sisters, helping to destroy the world in the name of death. Either way, if you don't give me the journey book, and right now, her life is forfeit."
"What do you think this will accomplish?" Anne whispered in despair.
"It will be a start at halting your meddling in the lives of the people of the Midlands and the rest of the New World. In my life, in Richard's life. It's the only beginning I can think to make, short of killing you both. You would not like to know how close I am to that alternative. Now give me the journey book." Anne stared down at Kaelin's hand open before her. She blinked at her tears. Finally she pulled off a woolen mitten and worked the little book out from behind her belt. She paused a moment, reverently gazing at it, but in the end laid it on Kaelin's palm.
"Dear Creator," Anne whispered, "forgive this poor hurting child of yours for what she is about to do."
Kaelin tossed the book in the fire. With ashen faces, Anne and Sister Alessandra stood staring at the book in the hissing flames. Kaelin snatched up Richard's sword. "Kara, let's get going." "The horses are ready. I was saddling them when these two showed up." Kaelin dumped the hot water to the side while Kara started quickly collecting their belongings. They both stuffed items in the saddlebags. Other gear they slung over their shoulders and carried to the horses to be strapped back on the saddles. Without looking back at Anne or Alessandra, Kaelin swung up into her cold saddle. With a grim Kara at her side, she turned her mount and cantered off into the swirling snow. Chapter 28. As soon as she saw Kaelin and Kara vanish like vengeful spirits into the whiteness, Anne fell to her knees and thrust her hands into the fire to snatch the burning journey book from its funeral pyre in the white-hot coals.
"Prelate!" Alessandra cried. "You'll burn yourself!"
Flinching back from the ferocity of the pain, Anne ignored the gagging stench of burning flesh and thrust her hands again into the wavering heat of the fire. She saw, rather than felt, that she had the priceless journey book in her fingers. The entire rescue of the burning book took only a second, but through the prism of pain, it seemed an eternity. Biting down on her lower lip against the suffering, Anne rolled to the side. Alessandra came running back with her hands full of snow. She threw it on Anne's bloody, blackened fingers, and the journey book clenched in them. She let out a low wail of agony when the wet snow contacted the burns.
Alessandra fell to Anne's side, taking her hands by the wrists, gasping in tears of fright.
"Prelate! Oh, prelate! You shouldn't have!"
Anne was in a state of shock for the pain. Alessandra's shrill voice seemed a distant drone.
"Oh, Anne, why didn't you use magic or even a stick?"
Anne was surprised by the question. In her panic over the priceless journey book burning there in the fire, her mind was filled only with the single thought to get it out before it was too late. Her reckless action, she knew, was precipitated by her bitter anguish over Kaelin's accusations.
"Hold still,"
Alessandra admonished through her own tears. "Hold still, and let me see what I can do about healing you. It will be all right. Just hold still." Anne sat on the snowy ground, dazed by the hurt, and by the words still hammering her from inside her head, as she let Alessandra work at healing her hands. The sister could not heal her heart.
"She was wrong," Alessandra said, as if reading Anne's thoughts. "She was wrong, prelate."
"Was she?" Anne asked in a numb voice, after the searing pain in her fingers finally began to ease, replaced by the achingly uncomfortable tingling of magic coursing into her flesh, doing its work.
"Was she, Alessandra?"
"Yes. She doesn't know so much as she thinks. She's a child. She couldn't be a paltry 3 decades yet. People can't learn to wipe their own noses in that much time."
Alessandra was prattling, Anne knew, prattling with her worry over the journey book, and with her worry over the anguish caused by Kaelin's words.
"She's just a foolish child who doesn't know the first thing about anything. There's much more to it, much more. It isn't so simple as she thinks, not so simple at all."
Anne wasn't so sure anymore. Everything seemed dead to her. 500 years of work, had it all been a mad task driven on by selfish desires and a fool's faith, wouldn't she, in Kaelin's place, have seen it the same way? Endless rows of corpses lay before her in the trial going on in her mind. What was there to say in her defense? She had 1,000 answers for the mother confessor's charges, but at that moment they all seemed empty. How could Anne possibly excuse herself to the dead?
"You're the prelate of the Sisters of the Light," Alessandra rambled on during a pause in her work. "She should have been more considerate of who she was talking to, more respectful. She doesn't know everything involved. There's a great deal more to it, a great deal. After all, the Sisters of the Light don't casually choose their prelate."
Nor did confessors casually choose their mother confessor. An hour passed, and then another, before Alessandra finally finished the difficult and tedious work of healing Anne's burns. Burns were difficult injuries to heal. It was a tiring experience being helpless and cold while magic sizzled through her, while Kaelin's words sliced her very soul. Anne flexed the aching fingers when Alessandra had finished. A shadow of the burning pain lingered, as she knew it would for a good long time. But they were healed, and she had her hands back. When the matter was weighed, though, she feared she had lost a great deal more of herself than she had recovered. Exhausted and cold, Anne, to Alessandra's worry, laid down beside the hissing remnants of the fire that had so hurt her. At that moment, she had no desire to ever rise again. Her years, nearly 1,000 of them, seemed to have all caught up with her at once. She missed Nathan terribly right then. The prophet doubtless would have had something wise or foolish to say. Either would have comforted her. Nathan always had something to say. She missed his boastful voice, his kind, childlike, knowing eyes. She missed the touch of his hand. Weeping silently, Anne cried herself to sleep. Her dreams kept the sleep from being either restful or deep. She awoke in the late morning to the feel of Alessandra's comforting hand on her shoulder. The sister had added more wood to the fire, so it offered warmth.
"Are you feeling better, prelate?"
Anne nodded her lie. Her first thought was for the journey book. She gazed at it lying in the protection of Alessandra's lap. Anne sat up and carefully lifted the blackened book from the sling of Alessandra's dress.
"Prelate, I'm so worried for you."
With a sour wave of her hand,
Anne dismissed the concern.
While you slept, I've looked at the book.
Anne grunted. Looks bad. Alessandra nodded.
That's what I thought. I don't think it can be salvaged.
Anne used an easy, gentle flow of her hand to hold the pages, little more than ash, together as she carefully turned them. It has endured 3,000 years. Were it ordinary paper, it would be beyond help, ended. But this is a thing of magic, Alessandra, forged in the fires of magic by wizards of power not seen in all those 3,000 years, until Richard. What can we do? Do you know a way to restore it?
Anne shook her head as she inspected the curled, charred journey book. I don't know if it can be restored. I'm just saying that it's a thing of magic. Where there is magic, there is hope.
Anne pulled a handkerchief from a pocket deep under the layers of her clothes. Laying the blackened book in the center of the handkerchief, she carefully folded the handkerchief up to hold it together. She wove a spell around it all to protect and preserve it for the time being.
I will have to try to find a way to restore it, if I can. If it can even be restored.
Alessandra Rye washed her hands.
Until then, our eyes with the army are lost.
Anne nodded.
We won't know if the Imperial Order decides to finally leave their place in the south and move up into the Midlands. I can give no guidance to Verna. Prelate, what do you think will happen if the Order finally decides to attack, and Richard isn't there with them? What will they do, without the Lord Raoul to lead them?
Anne did her best to move the terrible weight of Caelan's words to the side as she considered the immediate situation.
Verna is the prelate now. At least as far as the sisters with the army are concerned, she will guide them wisely, and Zed is with them, helping the sisters prepare for battle should it come. They could have no better counsel than to have a wizard of Zed's experience with them. As first wizard, he has been through great wars before. We will have to place our faith in the Creator that he will watch over them.
I can't advise them unless I can restore the journey book. Unless I can do that, I won't even know their situation.
You could go there, prelate.
Anne brushed snow from the side of her shoulder where she had been lying on the ground as she considered that possibility.
The Sisters of the Light think I'm dead. They put their faith in Verna now as their prelate. It would be a terrible thing to do to Verna and to the rest of the sisters to come back to life in the middle of such trying circumstances. Certainly many would be relieved to have me back, but it also sows the seeds of confusion and doubt. Battle is a very bad time for such seeds to sprout.
But they would all be encouraged by your...
Anne shook her head. Verna is their leader. Such a thing could forever undermine their trust in her authority. They must not lose their faith in her leadership. I must put the welfare of the Sisters of the Light above all else. I must keep their best interests at heart now.
But Anne, you are the prelate.
Anne stared off. What good has that done anyone?
Alessandra's eyes turned down. The wind moaned sorrowfully through the trees. Gusts kicked up blue-gray trailers of snow and whipped them along through the campsite. The sunlight had vanished behind somber clouds. Anne wiped her nose on the edge of her icy cloak. Alessandra laid a compassionate hand on Anne's arm.
You brought me back from the Keeper. Back into the light of the Creator. I was in Jagang's hands and treated you terribly when they captured you, yet you never gave up on me. Who else would have cared? Without you, my soul would be lost for all time. I doubt you could fathom my gratitude for what you did, prelate.
Despite Alessandra's apparent return to the Creator's light, Anne had been fooled by the woman before. Years before, Alessandra had turned to the Keeper, becoming a Sister of the Dark, and Anne had never known. How could one have faith in a person after such a betrayal? Anne looked up into Alessandra's eyes.
I hope so, sister. I pray such is really true.
It is, prelate. Anne lifted a hand toward the shrouded sun. and perhaps when I go to the Creator's light in the next world, that one good act will erase the thousands of lives lost because of me." Alessandra looked away, rubbing her arms through the layers of clothes. She turned and put two sticks of wood on the fire.
"We should make a hot meal. That will make you feel better, Prelate. It will make us both feel better."
Anne sat on the ground, watching Alessandra prepare her hearty camp soup. Anne doubted that even the pleasant aroma of soup would arouse her appetite.
"Why do you think Nikki took Richard?"
Alessandra asked as she put dried mushrooms from the pouch into the soup. Anne looked up at Alessandra's puzzled face.
"I can't imagine, except to think that she may be lying and that she is taking him to Chagang."
Alessandra broke up dried meat and dropped it into the boiling pot of soup.
"Why, if she had him, and he was forced to do as she asked, why lie? What would be the purpose?"
"She's a sister devoted to the Keeper." Anne lifted her hands and let them flop back into her lap.
"That's excuse enough to lie, isn't it? Lying is wrong, it's wicked. That's reason enough."
Alessandra shook her head in admonition.
"Prelate, I was a sister of the dark, remember? I know better. That isn't the way it is at all. Do you always tell the truth just because you are devoted to the Creator's light? No. One lies for the Keeper just as you would lie for the Creator, to his ends, if lying is necessary. Why would Nikki lie about that? She was in control of the situation and had no need to lie."
"I can't imagine." Anne had difficulty caring enough to consider the question. Her mind was in a morass of hopeless thoughts. It was her fault Richard was in the hands of the enemy, not Nikki's.
"I think she did it for herself." Anne looked up. "What do you mean?" "I think Nikki is still looking for something."
"Looking for something? Whatever do you mean?" With a finger, Alessandra brushed a measure of spices into the pot from a waxed paper she'd unfolded.
"Ever since the first day I took her from her home and brought her to the Palace of the Prophets, Nikki continually grew more detached somehow. She always did whatever she could do to help people, but she was always a child who made me feel as if I was inadequate at fulfilling her needs."
"Such as?"
Alessandra shook her head. "I don't know. She always seemed to me to be looking for something. I thought she needed to find the light of the Creator. I pushed her mercilessly, hoping it would open her eyes to his way and fill her inner need. I allowed her no room to think about anything else. I even kept her away from her family. Her father was a selfish lover of money, and her mother, well, her mother was well-intentioned, but always made me feel uncomfortable. I thought the Creator would fill that private void within Nikki."
Alessandra hesitated.
"And then I thought it was the Keeper she needed."
"So you think she took Richard to fill some inner need? How does that make sense?"
"I don't know."
Alessandra breathed out heavily in frustration. She stirred the soup as she drizzled in a pinch of salt.
"Prelate, I think I failed Nikki."
"In what way?"
"I don't know. Perhaps I failed to involve her adequately in the needs of others, gave her too much time to think of herself. She always seemed devoted to the welfare of her fellow man. But maybe I should have rubbed her nose in other people's troubles more, to teach her the Creator's way of virtue through caring more for her fellow man rather than her own selfish wants."
"Sister,
I hardly think that could be it. Once she asked me for an extravagant black dress to wear to her mother's funeral, and of course I refused such a profligacy, because it was unfitting for a novice, needing to learn to put others first, but other than that one time, I never knew Nikki to once ask for anything for herself. You did an admirable job with her, Alessandra." Anne recalled that after that, Nikki started wearing black dresses.
"I remember that." Alessandra didn't look up. "When her father died, I went with her to his funeral.
I always felt sorry for taking her away from her family, but I explained to her that she was so talented that she had great potential for helping others and must not waste it.
It's always hard to bring young ones to the palace. It's difficult to part a child from loving parents. Some adapt better than others.
Well, she told me she understood. Nikki was always good that way. She never objected to anything, any duty.
Perhaps I assumed too much because she always threw herself into helping others, never once complaining. At her father's funeral, I wanted to help her over her grief. Even though she had that same cool exterior she always had, I knew her. I knew she was hurting inside. I tried to comfort her by telling her not to remember her father like that, but to try to remember him as he was when he was alive.
Those are kind words to one in such grief, sister. You offered wise advice.
Alessandra glanced up.
She was not comforted, prelate. She looked at me with those blue eyes of hers. You remember her blue eyes.
Anne nodded.
I remember.
Well, she looked at me with those piercing blue eyes, like she wanted to hate me. But even that emotion was beyond her, and she said in that lifeless voice of hers that she couldn't remember him as he was when he was alive, because she had never known him when he was alive.
Isn't that the strangest thing you've ever heard?
Anne sighed.
It sounds like Nikki. She always was one to say the strangest things at the strangest times. I should have offered her more guidance in her life. I should have taken more interest in her. But there were so many matters needing my attention. No, prelate, that was my job. I failed in it. Somehow I failed, Nikki.
Anne pulled her cloak tighter against a bitter gust of wind. She took the bowl of soup when Alessandra handed it to her.
Worse, prelate. I brought her to the shadow of the keeper.
Anne looked over the rim of the bowl as she took a sip. She carefully set the steaming bowl in her lap.
What's done is done, Alessandra.
While Alessandra sipped at her soup, Anne's mind wandered to Caelan's words. They were words spoken in anger, and as such were to be forgiven, or were they to be considered in an honest light? Anne feared to say Caelan's words were wrong. She feared they were true. For centuries, Anne had worked with Nathan and the prophecies, trying to avoid the disasters she saw and the ones he pointed out to her. What if Nathan had been pointing out things that were only dead words, as Caelan said? What if he only pointed them out so as to bring about his own escape? After all, what Anne had set in motion with Richard had also resulted in the prophet's escape. What if she had been duped into being the one to bring about all those terrible results?
Could that be true?
Grief threatened to overwhelm her. She was beginning to greatly fear that she had been so absorbed in what she thought she knew that she had acted on false assumptions. Caelan could be right. The prelate of the Sisters of the Light might be personally responsible for more suffering than any monster born into the world had ever brought about.
Alessandra, Anne said in a soft voice after she finished her bowl of soup, we must go and try to find Nathan. It's dangerous for the prophet to be out there, in the world that is defenseless against him.
Where would we look? Anne shook her head in dismay at the enormity of the task.
A man like Nathan does not go unnoticed in the world. I must believe that if we set our minds to it, we could find him.
Alessandra watched Anne's face.
Well, as you say, it is dangerous for the prophet to be loose in the world.
It is indeed. We must find him.
It took Verna 20 years to find Richard.
So it did. But part of that was by my design. I hid facts from Verna. Then again, Nathan is no doubt hiding facts from us. Nonetheless, we have a responsibility. Verna is with the sisters and with the army. They will do what they can in that capacity. We must go after Nathan. That part of it is up to us. Alessandra set her bowl aside. "Prelate, I understand why you believe the prophet must be found, but just as you feel you must find him, I feel I must find Nikki. I'm responsible for bringing her to the Keeper of the Underworld. I may be the only one who can bring her back to the light. I have a unique understanding of that journey of the heart. I fear what will happen to Richard if I don't try to stop Nikki." "Worse," Alessandra added, "I fear what will happen to the world if Richard dies. Caitlin is wrong. I believe in what you've worked for all these years. Caitlin is making a complex thing sound simple because her heart is broken. But without what you did, she would never even have met Richard." Anne considered Alessandra's words. The seduction of acquittal was undeniable. "But Alessandra, we don't have the slightest idea where they went. Nikki is as smart as they come. If, as she says, she is acting on her own behalf, she will be clever about not being found. How would you even go about such a search? Nathan is a prophet loose in the world. You remember the trouble he's caused in the past. He could, by himself, bring about such calamity as the world has never seen. Nathan boasts when he's around people. He will surely leave such traces where he goes. With Nathan, I believe we at least have a chance of success. But hunting for Nikki..." Alessandra met Anne's gaze with grim resolution. "Prelate, if Richard dies, what chance have the rest of us?" Anne looked away. "What if Alessandra was right? What if Caitlin was right?" She had to catch Nathan. It was the only way to find out. "Alessandra, you don't completely trust me, do you, Prelate?" Anne met the other woman's eyes, this time with authority. "No, Alessandra, I admit that I don't. How can I? You deceived me. You lied to me. You turned your back on the Creator and gave yourself to the Keeper of the Underworld."
"But I have come back to the light, Prelate."
"Have you? Would not one acting for the Keeper lie for him, as you yourself only moments ago suggested?" Alessandra's eyes filled with tears.
"That's why I must try to find Nikki, Prelate. I must prove that your faith in me was not misplaced. I need to do this to prove myself to you."
"Or you need to help Nikki and the Keeper?"
"I know I'm not worthy of trust. I know that. You said we must find Nathan, but we must also help Richard."
"Two tasks of the utmost importance," Anne said, "and no journey book to call for help." Alessandra wiped at her eyes.
"Please, Prelate, let me help. I am responsible for Nikki going to the Keeper. Let me try to make amends. Let me try to bring her back. I know what the return journey is like. I can help her. Please, let me try to save her eternal soul."
Anne's gaze sank to the ground. Who was she to question the value of another? What had her life been for? Had she herself been the Keeper's best ally? Anne cleared her throat.
"Sister Alessandra, you are to listen to me, and you are to listen well. I am the prelate of the Sisters of the Light, and it is your duty to do as I command."
Anne shook a finger at the woman.
"I'll have no arguments, do you hear? I must go find the prophet before he does something beyond foolish. Richard is of utmost importance to our cause, you know that. I'm getting old, and would only slow the search for him and his captor. I want you to go after him. No arguments now. You are to find Richard Rall, and put the fear of the Creator back into our wayward sister Nikki."
Alessandra threw her arms around Anne, sobbing her thanks. Anne patted the sister's back, feeling miserable about losing a companion, and afraid that she might have lost her faith in everything for which she stood. Alessandra pushed away.
"Prelate, will you be able to travel alone? Are you sure you're up to this?"
"Bah! I may be old, but I'm not useless. Who do you think came into the center of Jagang's army and rescued you, child?" Alessandra smiled through her tears.
"You did, Prelate, all by yourself. No one but you could have done such a thing. I hope I can do half as well for Nikki when I find her.
You will, sister. You will. May the Creator cradle you in his palm as you go on your journey.
Anne knew that they were both going off on difficult journeys that could take years.
Hard times lie ahead, Alessandra said.
But the Creator has two hands, does he not? One for me, and one for you, prelate?
Anne couldn't help but to smile at such a mental picture.
Chapter 29
Come in!
Zed grouched to the persistent throat-clearing outside his tent. He poured water from the ewer into the dented metal pot that served as his wash-basin sitting atop a log round. When he splashed some of the water up onto his face, he gasped aloud. He was astonished that water that cold would still pour.
Good morning, Zed.
Still gasping, Zed swiped the frigid water from his eyes. He squinted at Warren.
Good morning, my boy.
Warren blushed. Zed reminded himself he probably shouldn't call someone twice his own age boy. It was Warren's own fault. If the boy would just stop looking so young. Zed sighed as he bent to forage for a towel among the litter of maps, dirty plates, rusty dividers, empty mugs, blankets, chicken bones, rope, an egg he'd lost in the middle of a lesson weeks back, and other paraphernalia that seemed to collect over time in the corner of his small field tent. Warren was twisting his purple robes into a small wad at his hip.
I just came from Berna's tent.
Zed halted his search and looked back over his shoulder.
Any word?
Warren shook his head of curly blonde hair.
Sorry, Zed.
Well,
Zed scoffed.
That doesn't mean anything. That old woman has more lives than a cat I once had that was hit by lightning and fell down a well, both in the same day. Did I ever tell you about that cat, my boy?
Well, yes, you did, actually.
Warren smiled.
But if you like, I wouldn't mind hearing it again.
Zed dismissed the story with a feeble wave as he turned more serious.
I'm sure Anne is fine. Vernon knows Anne better than I do, but I do know that that old woman is downright hard to harm.
Verna said something like that, Warren smiled to himself.
Anne always could scowl a thunderstorm back over the horizon. Zed grunted his agreement as he went back to digging through his pile.
Tougher than bad meat, she is.
He tossed two outdated maps over his shoulder. Warren leaned down a little.
What is it you're looking for, if you don't mind my asking?
My towel, I know I had.
Right there, Warren said.
Zed looked up.
What?
Your towel, Warren pointed again.
Right there on the back of the chair.
Oh.
Zed snatched up the wandering towel and dried his dry face. He scowled at Warren.
You have the eyes of a burglar.
He tossed the towel in the pile with everything else where it belonged. Warren's grin returned.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Zed cocked his head.
Do you hear that?
Warren's grin melted away as he joined Zed in listening to the sounds outside. Horses clogged along the hard ground. Men talked as they passed the tent. Others called orders. Fires crackled. Wagons squeaked and gear clanged and rattled.
Hear what?
Zed's face twisted in vague unease.
I don't know. Like, maybe a whistle.
Warren lifted a thumb over his shoulder.
The men whistle now and again to get the attention of their horses and such. Sometimes it's necessary.
They all did their best to keep the whistling and other noise down. Whistles especially carried in such open terrain. It was hard to miss something the size of the Daharan's encampment, of course. So they moved camp from time to time to keep the enemy from getting too confident about the location. Sound could give away more than they would like. Zed shook his head.
Must have been that. Someone's long whistle.
But still, Zed, Warren went on, it's long past time when Anne would have sent Verna a message.
There were times when I was with Anne that she couldn't send messages.
Zed waved an arm expansively.
"Bags, there was a time when I wouldn't let her use that confounded journey book. The thing gave me the shivers. I don't know why she couldn't just send letters like normal people."
His face, he knew, was betraying his concern.
"Confounded journey books. Lazy way of doing things. I got to be first wizard, and I never needed a journey book."
"She could have lost it. That's what Verna suggested, anyway." Zed held up a finger.
"That's right. She very well could have. It's small. It could have fallen from her belt, and she didn't notice until she and Alessandra made camp. She'd never find the book in a circumstance like that."
He shook the finger.
"Makes my point, too. You shouldn't depend on little trick things of magic like that. It just makes you lazy."
"That's what Verna thought, too. About it falling from her belt, I mean." Warren chuckled. "Or a cat could even have eaten it." From beneath a furrowed brow, Zed peered at Warren.
"A cat? What cat?"
"Any cat," Warren cleared his throat. "I just meant... oh, never mind. I never was any good at jokes." Zed's knotted brow lifted.
"Oh, I see. A cat could have eaten it. Yes, yes, I see."
He didn't, but Zed forced a chuckle for the boy's sake.
"Very good, Warren.
Anyway, she probably lost it. It's probably something as simple as that."
"If that's the case," Zed reasoned, "she will likely end up coming here to let us know that she's all right. Or at least she will send a letter, or a messenger, or something. Ever more likely, though, she probably had nothing to tell us, and simply saw no need to bother with sending a message in her journey book."
Warren made a skeptical face. "But we haven't had a message from her for nearly a month." Zed waved a hand dismissively.
"Well, she was way up north, up almost to where Richard and Kaelin are, last we heard. If she did lose the book and started right out to come here from there, she wouldn't show up for yet another week or two. If she went on to see Richard first, then it will be longer, I imagine. Anne doesn't travel all that fast, you know."
"I know," Warren said. "She is getting up there in years, but that's just another reason why I'm so worried." What really worried Zed was the way the journey book went silent, just as Anne was about to reach Richard and Kaelin. Zed had been eagerly anticipating hearing that Richard and Kaelin were safe, that Kaelin was all healed, maybe even that Richard was ready to return. Anne knew how eager they were for word, and would certainly have had something to report. Zed didn't like the coincidence that the journey book went silent right at that time. He didn't like it one bit. The whole thing made him want to scratch as if he had been bitten by a white mosquito.
"Now look here, Warren. A month isn't so long not to hear from her. In the past, it's sometimes been weeks and weeks between her messages. It's too early to start getting ourselves all worked up with worry. Besides, we have our own concerns which require our attention."
Zed didn't know what they could do even if Anne were in trouble somewhere. They had no idea how to find her. Warren flashed an apologetic smile. "You're right, Zed." Zed moved a map and found a half loaf of bread left from the night before. He took a big bite, giving himself an excuse to chew instead of talk. When he talked, he feared he only let out the true level of his worry, not just about Anne, but also about Richard and Kaelin. Warren was an able wizard, and smarter than just about anyone Zed had ever met. Zed often had trouble finding something to talk about that Warren hadn't already heard of, or was intimately familiar with. There was something refreshing about sharing knowledge with someone who nodded knowingly at esoteric points of magic that no one else could fathom. someone who could fill in little gaps in the odd spell, or delighted at having his own little gaps filled in by what Zed knew. Warren retained more about prophecy than Zed thought anyone had a right to know in the first place. Warren was a fascinating mix of obstinate old man and callow youth. He was at once set in his ways, and at the same time openly, infinitely, innocently curious. The one thing that made Warren fall silent, though, was when they discussed Richard's vision. Warren's face would go blank, and he would sit without comment while others argued over what Richard had said in his letters, and if there was any validity to it. Whenever Zed had Warren alone and asked him what he thought, Warren would say only, "I follow Richard. He is my friend, and he is the Lord Ra." Warren would not debate or discuss Richard's instructions to the army, or more specifically, Richard's refusal to give instructions. Richard had given his orders, as far as Warren was concerned, and they were to be swallowed, not chewed. Zed noticed that Warren was twisting his robes again. Zed waved his bread.
"You look like a wizard with his pants full of itching spells. Do you have something you need to let out, Warren?"
Warren grinned sheepishly. "Am I that obvious?" Zed patted the boy on the back.
"No, Warren, I'm just that good."
Warren laughed at Zed's joke. Zed gestured with his bread toward the folding canvas chair. Warren looked behind himself at the chair, but shook his head. Zed figured it must be important if Warren felt he needed to stand to say it. "Zed, with winter upon us, do you believe the Imperial Order will attack or wait until spring?"
"Well, now, that's always a worry. The not knowing leaves your stomach all in knots. But you've all worked hard. You've all trained and practiced. You'll do just fine, Warren. The sisters, too."
Warren didn't seem to be interested in hearing what Zed was saying. He was scratching his temple, waiting his turn to speak. "Yes, well, thank you, Zed. We have been working hard. General Lyden thinks winter is our best friend right now. He, his Keltish officers, and some of the Daharans believe that Jagang would be foolhardy to start a campaign with winter just setting in. Kelton isn't all that far north of here, so General Lyden is familiar with the difficulty of winter warfare and the terrain we would fall back to. He's convinced the Order is waiting for spring."
"General Lyden is a good man, and may be second in command after General Rybish,"
Zed said in an even voice as he watched Warren's blue eyes.
"But I don't agree with him."
Warren looked crestfallen. "Oh." The general had brought his Keltish division down south a couple of months before to reinforce the Daharan army, at General Rybish's request. Regarding Caelan as their queen, since Richard had named her so, the Keltish forces still had an independent streak, even if they were now part of the Daharan Empire, as everyone had taken to calling it. Zed didn't do anything to discourage such talk. It was better for everyone in the New World to be one mighty force than a collection of tribes. As far as Zed was concerned, Richard had clearly had the right instincts in that. A war of this scale would have been ungovernable were the New World not won. Having everyone think of themselves as part of the Daharan Empire first and foremost could only help make it so. Zed cleared his throat.
"But that's just a guess, Warren. I could be wrong. General Lyden is an experienced man and no fool. I could be wrong."
"But so could Lyden be wrong. I guess that puts you with General Rybish. He's been pacing his tent every night for the last 2 months." Zed shrugged.
"Is there something important to you, Warren, that hinges on what the Imperial Order does? Are you waiting for them to make up your mind for you about something?"
Warren held up his hands as if to ward the very notion.
"No, no, of course not. It's just that it would be a bad time to be thinking about such things, is all.
But if they were going to lie low for the winter, Warren fussed with his sleeve. That's all I meant. If you thought they were going to wait until spring or something, his voice trailed off.
And if they were, then?
Warren stared at the ground while he twisted his robes at his stomach into a purple knot. If you think they might decide to move this winter, then it wouldn't be right for me, for us, to be thinking about such things. Zed scratched his chin and changed his approach.
Let's say I believe the Order is going to sit tight for the winter. Then what might you do in that case?
Warren threw his hands up. Zed, will you marry Verna and me? Zed's brow went up as he drew back his head.
Begs! My boy, that's a mouthful to swallow first thing in the morning.
Warren took two big strides closer. Will you, Zed? I mean, only if you really think the Order is going to sit down there at Andereth for the winter. If they are, then, well, then it would be, I mean, we might as well...
Do you love Verna, Warren?
Of course I do.
And does Verna love you?
Well, of course she does. Zed shrugged.
Then I'll marry the both of you.
You will? Oh, Zed, that would be wonderful. Warren turned, reaching one hand toward the tent's opening, lifting his other back toward Zed. Wait. Wait there a moment.
Well, I was about to flap my arms and fly to the moon, but if you want me to wait...
Warren was already out the tent. Zed heard muffled voices coming from outside. Warren came back in, right on Verna's heels. Verna beamed from ear to ear, which Zed found unsettling in its own way, being so unusual.
Thank you for offering to marry us, Zed. Thank you. Warren and I wanted you to do the ceremony. I told him you would do it, but Warren wanted to ask you and give you a chance to say no. I can't think of anything more meaningful than being wedded by the first wizard.
Zed thought she was a lovely woman. A little fussy about rules and such at times, but well-intentioned. She worked hard. She didn't shy from some of the things Zed had asked of her, and she obviously held Warren in warm regard as well as respecting him.
When? Verna asked. When do you think would be an appropriate time?
Zed screwed up his face.
Do you two think you can wait until I've had a proper breakfast?
They both grinned. We were thinking more along the lines of an evening wedding, Verna said. Maybe we could have a party with music and dancing. Warren gestured nonchalantly.
We were thinking something to make a pleasant break in all the training.
A break? How much time do you two think you will be needing away from your duties?
Oh, no, Zed. Warren had gone as purple as his robes. We didn't mean we would... I mean, we would still be doing... We would only like...
We don't want any time away, Zed, Verna put in, bringing Warren's bashful babbling to an end. We just thought it would be a nice opportunity for everyone to have a well-earned party for an evening. We won't be leaving our posts.
Zed put a bony arm around Verna's shoulders.
You two can have all the time away you want. We all understand. I'm happy for you both.
That's great, Zed, Warren said with a sigh. We really...
A red-faced officer burst into the tent without so much as announcing himself.
Wizard Zarander!
Two sisters charged in right behind him.
Prelate, Sister Philippa called. They're coming, Sister Phoebe cried.
Both women were white-faced and looked to be on the verge of losing their breakfast. Sister Phoebe was trembling like a wet dog in winter. Zed then saw that Sister Philippa's hair was singed on one side, and the shoulder of her dress was blackened. She had been one of those on far watch for the enemy gifted. Now Zed knew what the whistling sound he thought he'd heard was. It was very distant screams. Rolling up from the distance came the note of the secondary waypoint alarm horns. Zed felt the faint tingle of magic woven through them, so he knew they were genuine. Outside the tent, the muted sounds of camp life rose into a din of activity. Weapons were being yanked from where they were stacked. Fires hissed as they were doused. Swords were being strapped on. Others were being drawn. Horses whinnied at the sudden racket.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 9.